The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Those of you that are around in 2008 know that the Great Recession was a time of economic turmoil and disruption. After the crash, many real estate investors lost everything they'd worked so hard to achieve, but not every investor suffered that fate. Even during the worst parts of the downturn, some real estate professionals were able to grow and scale their businesses. Not only did they come out the other side unscathed, but they also created a better financial situation than ever before. Well, we are talking to somebody who can give us firsthand account of what that was like to be an investor during that time. In fact, he is a returning guest who was on episode 169 entitled Real Estate Investing Success Through Great Timing and Effective Deal Analysis. And that was on January 8th, 2018. I'm talking about Jay Scott. And Jay Scott is a name familiar to, I'm sure, many of you and our listeners know him from being on the show before, but he's a full-time entrepreneur and investor living in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. In 2008, Jay and his wife, Carol, decided to leave their 80-hour work weeks in Silicon Valley to move back east, start a family, and try something new, real estate. Since then, they have bought, built, rehabbed, sold, lent on, and held over 300 deals, encompassing over 40 million in transactions. Jay also runs the popular website 123flip.com, is an active contributor to biggerpockets.com, and is the author of 3 best-selling books on real estate investing. His books have sold more than 100,000 copies in the past 5 years and have helped investors from around the world get started in investing in real estate. Well, Jay, welcome back to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Bill, so glad to be back. I can't believe it's been, 14 months.
I know, a long time, man. It seems like we've just been hanging out. You know, time flies when you're investing in real estate, I'll tell you.
It's been a crazy last year, but it's been fun as always.
Oh, great. Well, Jay, you know, bring us up to date since it has been a little while. What is new in your life?
Yeah, so a whole lot that's new and a whole lot that stayed the same. Let's see. The past year, I'll be honest, we headed into 2018 pretty strong. And by mid-2018, I was getting a little bit burnt out on real estate. I hit the 10-year mark of quitting my job with my wife and starting to invest in real estate. We had been flipping houses pretty much straight for 10 years. And I was exhausted. I was burned out. I needed a break. I was actually looking forward to doing some more writing. So I sat down and I started writing last summer. I did revised editions of my first two books. I ended up doing a revised edition of my third book. And then I decided to write a fourth and a fifth book. And so literally I spent a good 8 months straight writing. And it's been great. It gave me a chance to recharge the batteries, to get out a lot of ideas on paper that I've been looking to get out. And it's now March of 2019, and I'm excited to say that I am thrilled to be getting back into real estate and doing some new stuff and taking on some new challenges. So it was a good break, and now I'm excited to be back.
Oh, that's great. Well, and I also hear you're moving out of Washington, D.C. area.
Yes.
That is kind of a interesting. I thought you guys were going to be there sort of for the long term, but moving down south, right?
Yeah, we're moving down to Florida. So when we left our jobs back in 2008, the goal was basically put our family and our life before our business. And my wife has never really been very happy with the weather up here in DC. She's a warm weather person. And so when we moved up here a few years ago, she promised to give it 5 years because this is where I'm from and I love living here, but she promised to give it 5 years and see how she felt. And she goes through seasonal depression in the winter. Literally, she spends the winter curled up in bed, basically in tears because she just can't handle the cold weather. So we made a family decision a couple months ago that we're going to give ourselves a change, get down to some warmer weather, and we are moving down to the west coast of Florida at the beginning of this coming summer.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, Florida is a beautiful place. You guys are going to have a blast down there. I mean, you weren't, I guess it wasn't all that different when you were in Georgia, right? I mean, you got a lot of the humidity and similar conditions.
Exactly. We'll be a little bit closer to the water.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, gosh, we got a lot to talk about today. I am real excited that we're going to actually be talking about one of those new books of yours, and it's entitled Recession-Proof Real Estate Investing. Totally got me on the title there. I happened to see it on the Bigger Pockets website, and I said, this is great. I got to get a hold of this. So I am like very stoked to hear, because this has been, we've been talking about this for a while on this show, is we know that there is definitely an upcoming downturn or recession or whatever you want to call it, that's that market correction that is going to be happening. It's just a matter of when. So I want to kind of know what was motivation behind your actually jumping in and writing this book.
Yeah. So economics has always been an interest of mine. It's something that I've studied from a purely intellectual standpoint, but I've always been interested in economics just in general, how the economy works. And as a real estate investor, I've spent the last 10 years kind of digging in a little bit here and there about how different strategies work in different parts of the market cycle. And then about a year or two ago, it hit me that we're probably coming up on a downturn in the economy at some point soon. So if you look at economic cycle theory and you look at the history of the United States and the economy in the United States, it's pretty well defined that every 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we go through a full economic cycle. The market goes up, the market goes down, and we continue. Obviously, this particular cycle has been longer than those in recent history. We're moving on to 11 years now, which makes this kind of the longest economic cycle in U.S. history. But nonetheless, we're kind of still in that range of 5, 6, 7, 10 years where we can expect a downturn to come soon. So with that expectation in mind, I really started to dig in on what should I be doing and what should other investors be doing to ensure that when the downturn eventually comes, that they can still continue to make money in their business, they can still continue to make profits, and maybe even continue to grow their business and do better than they were doing during the expansion phase of the cycle. So about a year or two ago, I started to really dig in, looked at historic data on economic cycles, looked at what other investors had been doing during downturns. I talked to a bunch of investors that were active in 2001. I was active during the 2008 downturn, so I saw what was working and not working there. And after about a year of kind of looking into that informally, I decided to write a book that could touch on what I and other investors could and should be doing to make money when the downturn comes, but also to make money and to basically modify our investing strategies at every point in the economic cycle. And so I broke the economic cycle down into basically four phases. You essentially have that expansion phase, which is what we've seen since, I guess, about 2014, the market kind of going up. We see wage growth. We see unemployment dropping. We see people confident that the market is running well. Everything's going well. There's general economic optimism. And then you get to the kind of the top of the market, the phase that I call the peak phase. And what we've seen in past recessions is that peak phase of the market where things kind of go from heading up to leveling off to starting to trend down, there's a lot of uncertainty around what that looks like. In some recent recessions, we've seen a really quick, you get to the top and then we start to drop within just a couple months. We saw that in 2008. So 2007 was looking really good. We get into November, December of 2007. And then by February of 2008, the stock market was down 3,000 points and U.S. housing was down a tremendous amount. So we saw a really quick turnaround at the top. And so I think a lot of people expect that that's the way things typically work. But if you look back to the 2001 recession, if you look back to the recession in the late 80s, it's not always like that. Sometimes what we see at the top is a long, drawn out kind of plateau. So the market just kind of bounces along. We see unemployment kind of trending up and down and up and down. We see GDP, which is the total output of the U.S. economy, kind of going up and down over many months or even a year, where the economy is not growing, but it's also not shrinking. We're just kind of bouncing along the top. And that's what we're seeing these days. I mean, a lot of people who have been paying attention have seen that since last summer, economic indicators are kind of all over the board. We saw 4.2% economic growth last summer. That's down to about 2.2%. Who knows where it'll be next quarter. Unemployment dipped down to 3.6% and then jumped up to about 4.1% and now is down back to about 3.6% again. So that's kind of bouncing along. And all the other indicators are kind of doing the same thing. We're just kind of bouncing along the top. The next phase of the cycle is what we typically refer to as the recession or the downtrend, and that's when things start to move in the other direction. And we see kind of the market turn, unemployment goes up, GDP drops, people start to default on their consumer debt, companies default on their corporate debt, we see more foreclosures, we see short sales for those real estate investors, we see short sales hitting the market, and just general economic pessimism, just a lot of fear and concern in the markets. And then the fourth phase is kind of that recovery phase. We hit the bottom of the market and we start to go back up the other side, and that's kind of what we saw in the 2010 to 2014 timeframe, where we hit the bottom and things just slowly start to recover. So I define those four phases of the economic cycle. And again, it's the expansion, the peak, the recession, and then the recovery. And then what I tried to do for each phase was nail down which strategies would tend to work the best based on economic conditions, based on how lending works. Lending tends to tighten and loosen throughout different parts of the cycle. And just buyers and sellers mentalities are different throughout different parts of the cycle. So trying to nail down what strategies work during each part of the cycle, and then what investors can do at each point in the cycle to plan for the upcoming phases. So that was kind of the goal of the book. So anybody that reads it, hopefully what they're getting out of it is what they can be doing to plan for future phases of the cycle, the coming couple years, and then what they can actually be doing today to be making money and to be optimizing their income.
Got it. Or where we say we are right now on that cycle.
So I think, and I think most economists would agree, or I guess I agree with them, is that we're basically at the very top. And so what we're starting to see is, I like to think about the movement up, the expansion up, and then the recession down. They're kind of like spring, they're kind of like summer and winter. In the middle of summer, you go to any city in the country and it's all warm and nice, and every place is warmer than it was in the winter. You go to the winter and every place is colder or cooler than it was in the summer. And that's kind of the way the cycle works. So on the way up, every U.S. market is probably trending up. On the way down during the recession phase, every U.S. market is probably trending down. Now, the top and the bottom of the markets, where we see the transition from going up to going down and going down to going up, that's kind of more like spring and fall, where every city is going to be a little bit different. So at the top of the market, we expect that some cities right now are going to be doing well. They're still seeing economic growth. They're still seeing housing prices go up. They're still seeing lots of buyers. Other markets right now, like San Francisco is a good example, Seattle is a good example, certain parts of Florida is a good example, we're starting to see a lot of softening in the market. We're seeing housing prices drop. We're seeing buyers kind of flee that area. We're seeing investors flee the area. We're seeing some economic softening. So when you get to the top and the bottom of the market, and right now I think we're at the top of the market, a lot of people are going to have very different experiences. If you're in one city, you might be seeing something that indicates, hey, everything's good. If you're in another city, you might be experiencing just the opposite and thinking everything is bad. So depending on where you live right now, you may not think we're at the top of the market. You may think we're still going up. You may think that we're past the peak and we're already headed down. But if you look at the economy as a whole across the entire U.S., it seems pretty clear that we're somewhere right around the top of the market.
Right. In terms of, you know, investor, if this is the top of the market, obviously the prices are the highest, but we're investors, so we're looking to buy properties. Is this a time when you stop buying? Or, I mean, if we were to look at Warren Buffett's approach, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. Does that apply to sort of your investing philosophy at this point in the market?
Yeah. So at this point in the market, I definitely agree with Warren Buffett on that. And I think people are still being pretty greedy at this point. In a lot of cities, we're still seeing economic expansion. We're still seeing rent growth. We're still seeing price growth in the housing market. So I think in a lot of places, people are still being greedy. So I'm not saying to stop buying. In fact, I would never say to stop buying. But what I would say is that you should be more cautious. And you should think about how and where you are buying. So, for example, if you're still flipping houses right now, flipping houses will still work. But what I would caution is that you do things like you keep projects really short. So who knows where the market's going to be in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. So instead of taking on a project that's going to take you a year and a half to complete, take on those projects that are going to take you 3 or 4 months to complete. So that way there's less likelihood that the economy is going to fall out from under you before that project's completed. Next, I would say make sure that your margins are sufficient enough to cover whatever you think the worst case scenario is. So to use an example, I'm in the DC market. If I look back at like the last three recessions in the DC Maryland market, what I found is that pretty much the worst case drop that we've seen in these markets is about 12 to 15% in housing prices. So with that in mind, I'm comfortable doing a flip in this market, knowing that I have at least 12 to 15% profit margin on that deal. So that way, if in the middle of the flip, everything kind of all heck breaks loose and the market drops, if the market drops that worst case 12 to 15%, I'm probably going to break even on that property as opposed to losing money. If I go into a deal with expecting a 10% profit margin and the market drops 15%, well, I could be in trouble. I could end up losing money. So go in doing the research on your particular market, know what your likely worst case scenario is in that market, and then ensure that if you're doing flips, for example, that your profit margins would cover that worst case scenario so that that worst case scenario plays out, that you're either not losing money or you're not losing too much money.
So you're looking at getting more discounted properties than you might in a healthier economy, right?
Either more discounted properties or a lot of people at this point in the cycle, because deals are so hard to come by, they're loosening up their requirements. Like 10 years ago, everybody was looking for 15 or 20% returns on their flips. These days, I see a lot of investors who are happy with 8% returns or 10% returns. And what I would say is don't loosen up your criteria too much, because if you're getting down to 6, 7, 8% returns, it's not unlikely that in a year you could be in a market where the market's dropped more than 5 or 6 or 8% and you're looking at losses. So I'm not saying necessarily increase your criteria for buying flips, but don't decrease your criteria just because it's hard to find properties.
And what about for the buy and hold investor?
Yeah. And for buy and hold, there's never a bad time to buy and hold real estate. The key is just make sure your numbers work. And so what I'm telling buy and hold investors these days is, and again, this is based on historic data, if you can absorb, or if you're looking to buy a property, if you model the income on that property as 10% less than it is today, so you assume worst case that your rents might drop 10% during the downturn, and if you also assume that your vacancies might go up about 10% during the downturn, if your property still, if the numbers still work out to make it a good property, using a 10% increased vacancy and a 10% decreased rent, go for it, because you're unlikely to see more than a 10% increase in vacancy and a 10% decrease in rents in most markets. If you look back to 2008, that was pretty much, there were certainly a couple markets that took a much bigger hit than that. But in most markets around the country, the worst hit we saw was about 10% in rents and about 10% in vacancy. So if you can absorb that into any properties that you're buying, you should be good through the downturn.
Now, you started your real estate investing career right before that big recession, right?
I started in 2008. So okay. I started as the market, I missed the big drop. I didn't take any severe hits on properties I was holding, but certainly there were properties I bought in 2008 and the market kept dropping through 2009. So I kind of didn't bear the brunt of it, but I did see some additional downturn after I started buying.
You were primarily flipping, right? Or were you buying properties to hold on for as rentals?
I was mostly flipping from 2008 to 2014. In retrospect, I wish I would have bought a whole bunch more rentals. And so what I'm telling a lot of investors is during the recession, and especially towards the end of the recession, it's a great opportunity to start adding properties to your portfolio. And I think that's obvious today. There are a lot of people who are having trouble buying rentals today and wish they had started 10 years ago. But that's something to keep in mind, because when it actually happens, people tend to get more fearful and they say, well, my plan was to buy rentals, but now I'm worried about the market and I don't want to do it. So it's important to kind of define that strategy for yourself and execute on it when the time comes, even if it is a little bit scary.
I know that Warren Buffett looks like he's selling a lot and holding on to his liquidity. Should we be taking sort of a similar type of an approach to have that cash for when the market does go down to that lowest point?
Absolutely. So a couple things I would say. One, if you have the ability to hoard cash, if you have the ability to gather up a lot of cash and wait for deals to come along, that's a great idea right now. Second, now's a great time to be preparing from a credit standpoint. So one of the things that we tend to see, and again, for those investors that weren't doing this back in 2008, they don't realize the extent to which lending tightens up. And it's much, much more difficult to get loans during a recession. Most of the small banks, the portfolio lenders, we call them, have gone away from lending to investors, and the hard money lenders have gone away, or they're charging exorbitant rates. The private investors, your friends and family who might be investing in your deals now, are going to be very hesitant to invest in real estate when the market's turning down. So now's a great time to do things like if you have equity in your personal residence or in rental properties, now's a great time to be applying for home equity lines of credit. So lines of credit where you don't actually have to take the money out now, but you have it available for when you need it. So I'm telling people, take those home equity lines of credit. I don't generally recommend using credit cards to flip houses or to buy real estate, but now's a great time to try and get your credit card limits raised so that if you ever need a little bit more cushion, you'll have that. You're going to find it's very difficult to get credit limits raised during a recession. So if you do that now when it's easy, you'll be more prepared when the time comes. In terms of selling properties, I'm a big fan of, at this point in the cycle, when we could see a year or two or three downturn coming, think about what properties you're comfortable holding for the next 5 years. If you're comfortable holding your property for the next 5 years, you're probably in a position where you can weather whatever storm is coming along. But if you're thinking that you have properties that you might only want to hold for another year, year and a half, or you're considering selling now, now's a great time to be selling that property and taking the cash, because in a year or year and a half, you may find that the buyers aren't out there, that values have dropped, that it's more difficult to refinance. If you have a loan that's coming due in the next 2 or 3 years, now's a great time to refinance into a longer term loan because it's going to be more difficult to refinance during the recession. So don't necessarily sell just to sell, but if you were planning to sell in the next couple of years anyway, now's probably a great time.
Great, great advice. How are you investing differently now as opposed to a few years back?
So with the flips, I'm doing exactly what I mentioned before. So I'm trying to keep my projects very quick. I'm not doing any more ground up development, those projects that take a year, a year and a half. I'm trying to stay away from the large and complex flips that take 9 or 12 months. I'm really just trying to stick with the kind of the bread and butter paint and carpet rehabs that I can get done in 3 or 4 months, so that after every project, I can reassess the market and decide, should I keep going or not? So that's what I'm doing on the flip side. On the rental side, like I said, I'm always looking for rentals. I'm just modeling a little bit more conservatively. I'm assuming a modest drop in rents. I'm assuming a modest increase in vacancies. I'm doing a good bit of lending right now, and especially lending to buy and hold investors. So if you have the cash sitting around and you're looking to park it someplace that's relatively safe, investing in buy and hold or lending to buy and hold investors is relatively safe. In the worst case, assuming the deal is decent, in the worst case, if the market drops and your buy and hold investor isn't able to repay the loan, at very least they should have income coming in every month against that property and should be able to continue to pay on that loan. So my worst case scenario on the loans I'm making to buy and hold investors is if in a year or the 12 months after I make the loan, they can't repay it, I say, okay, let's extend it 12 months or 24 months and you just keep making payments. So for me as a lender, it's a relatively safe position to be in. Obviously, I'm not going to necessarily get access to that cash that I might want, but at least I know I'm continuing to receive payments. I'm continuing to generate a return on that cash, even if a worst case scenario comes along. And then finally, I'm starting to look into and starting to do some more multifamily purchases and syndications. So right now, multifamily in certain markets is still relatively attractive. Now, there are some markets, again, you want to look at what markets are going to be most recession resistant. There are some markets that are going to be very susceptible to getting hit hard by a recession. For example, if I wouldn't be investing in places like Las Vegas or Orlando, Florida right now, because those areas are heavily reliant on tourism. When the recession hits, the first places that get hit are the tourism industries. People stop taking vacations. People stop traveling. People stop spending money on those nice to have things. So I tend to stay away from the markets that are going to be more susceptible to a downturn. But then there are certain other markets in the country that tend to be a good bit recession resistant. And so these tend to be the smaller markets. These tend to be the markets that have more blue collar type industry, the type of industries that are going to be around even during the downturn. So I'm doing more multifamily investment, but I'm being very picky about the markets that I go into.
Maybe you could give us an example of some of those blue collar communities or areas that you think are fairly strong to withstand the recession.
Absolutely. So I like military towns. Military tends to be very recession-proof. The government is still going to be funding the military, and those towns where a large percentage of the tenant base are going to be military members of the military, they're still going to need a place to live, and they're still going to get paid the same amount. The government's going to be paying their rent. So I love military towns. We're doing some investing in Kentucky, where the backbone of the economy is agriculture, horses, and alcohol. I know it's funny to say, but those three industries tend to be very recession-proof. So, in general, those areas that tend to have more blue collar workers and industries that are focused on the needs of citizens as opposed to the wants of the country tend to be more recession proof. When you move into towns that are more focused on, let's say, tech, for example, that's more of a want than a need. So people tend to do away with those first. Those communities that are heavily reliant on the auto industry, for example, well, when the recession comes, a lot of Americans are going to slow down on their purchasing of automobiles or maybe stop purchasing automobiles. So those industries get hit. But you focus on the industries where people are going to spend money no matter what the economy. And those tend to be more recession resistant. So those are things like farming, things like alcohol, things like agriculture in general. Again, military towns. There are a lot of areas where industry is pretty insulated from a recession because people are going to keep buying certain types of goods no matter what the economy throws at us.
Now, you mentioned earlier how you build in maybe a 10% in your calculations in terms of rent, you know, going down maybe 10%. And are you seeing that more in, let's say, maybe A and B type properties? Like, because I know, you know, one of the factors that happened in during the, you know, the 2008 time was that the people were moving out of the sort of the luxury apartments into the, you know, the B and C's, to be able to adjust to, you know, what maybe it's a reduced income or whatever. And the C's seem to have a pretty strong demand.
Exactly. And yeah, that's something that I guess I failed to mention when I was talking about buy and hold, but it is very, very much a recession-proof strategy, which is if you're a buy and hold investor, yeah, focus on those C-class properties. Typically, the A-class properties get hit the hardest and get hit first. People moving from the luxury apartments down into the more standard B-class apartments. People in the B-class apartments who are losing their jobs or becoming underemployed are moving down to the C-class properties. And typically, the C-class tenants they don't have very far to go, so they're sticking around. So investing in C-class properties is one of the best recession-proof investment strategies for a buy-and-hold investor. Along with that, if you're interested in mobile homes or mobile home parks, it's another great investment during a recession. Again, because a lot of tenants who are, let's say, the C-class tenants who need a place to move down if they're losing their jobs or their wages are getting cut, a lot of times they'll move down into mobile home complexes. So mobile home parks are another great recession-proof strategy. Along those lines, if you're looking in the commercial world, self-storage is a great recession-proof asset. Typically during a recession, people move, like you said, from class A to B and B to C. And what they also do is they move into smaller units, smaller apartments, smaller houses. They might move in with each other, move back home, but they've got all this stuff and they don't want to get rid of their stuff. They think, okay, I'm going to need that in a couple years. So what do? They put it in storage. So self-storage tends to be very recession-proof. Along the same lines, if you're in the commercial space and you're in the retail space, people always need to shop, grocery shop. They need food. So if you're in the retail space, retail strip centers that are anchored by grocery stores tend to do really well. People may not go to malls, but they're still going to go to the grocery store, and they'll tend to go to those stores that are attached to the grocery store. Medical centers, another great recession-proof commercial asset. So people still spend as much on medical care, if not more, during a recession. So if you're in the commercial space, investing in strip centers that are focused on medical needs is a great recession-proof strategy. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of great recession-proof strategies across every asset class in real estate.
That's great. Well, you also talk about in your book about economic shifts that are happening and how we can anticipate or at least see clues that allow us to look at those shifts and employ strategies to sort of withstand those changes. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So we talked a little bit about the timing aspect. So the typical economic cycle, what we refer to as the business cycle in the United States, is generally around 6.5 years. So a lot of economists will say, hey, when you come close to that six, seven-year mark, it's possible that we're getting close to a recession. Let's start being prepared. Well, again, we're at 11 years right now. So a lot of economists from a timing standpoint are saying we're overdue and it's likely to happen soon. Now, obviously, what's happened in the past doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen again in the future, but it's a good indicator. And when we're 11 years into the average of a 7-year cycle, it's a good reason to think we may be getting close. Next, there are a lot of economic indicators that economists are going to look at to determine where we might be in the cycle. One is referred to as the yield curve, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail there. It's definitely worth, if you don't know what the yield curve is, do a little bit of research because it's very interesting. But it's basically how the interest rates for government treasury bonds move based on the economy. And the interest rates move in a certain direction when the economy's strong, and then the interest rates tend to do weird stuff when investors get scared and we're kind of within grasp of a recession. And so what we've seen over the last couple of months is that this yield curve, the treasury bond interest rates, have started to move in this way that's very indicative of an upcoming recession. In fact, a lot of economists will say that the yield curve, and when it starts doing these weird things, it is probably the single best predictor of a coming recession of any economic indicator out there. Over the last 60 years, when the yield curve has done these weird things, it's predicted a recession pretty much every single time, with the exception of one, maybe two times in the last 60 years. And so we're starting to see that change in the yield curve over the last couple of months, which is a good indication that we're probably 6, 12, or at most 18 months away from a recession. Next, we can look at things like unemployment. Typically, when unemployment gets to around 4% or just under 4%, that's a good indication that we've hit the top of the market. What happens when unemployment gets that low is that industries, companies have trouble hiring. There aren't a lot of employees out there for them to kind of pick up and hire to keep their businesses expanding. So what they have to do is they have to start paying higher wages to pull employees from other companies or get employees to come out of retirement to work for them. And when companies raise their wages to do this, they have to pass that increased cost of higher wages on to consumers. And they do that by increasing the prices of their goods and services. And that causes inflation. And when we start to see inflation, well, the government's reaction to inflation is they raise interest rates. And this raise in interest rates causes everything to kind of slow down. So long story short, when we see unemployment kind of drop too low, when we see it get 4%, 3.9%, 3.8%, that's a good indication that we're soon going to see inflation. We're soon going to see interest rates rise, which we have started seeing over the last few months. And eventually that's going to contribute to a slowdown. So even though unemployment numbers look fantastic, and it's a good indication that the economy is chugging along, that's also an indication that we might be getting to the end of this part of the cycle. Then there are other things like you can look at total output from the economy, what we refer to as gross domestic product or GDP. As the economy slows down, we see that number start to drop. And we've seen that over the last couple quarters. And last summer, we were seeing growth of about 4.2%. And last winter, growth was at 3.3%. And in Q4 of last year, it dropped to about 2.3%. And so we're kind of seeing that trajectory of the economy in general slow down. We're seeing interest rates start to rise, which is a good indicator that we're coming towards the end of the cycle. And then there are things like auto sales. So auto sales has historically been a great predictor of recessions. So when consumers start to get a little bit concerned about what's going on in the economy, the first thing they do is they push off those big ticket purchases. And auto sales is a big one. Instead of buying a new car every 2 or 3 or 5 years, they say, I can drive this car for a couple more years because I don't want to spend the money on a new car. So typically when we see a drop in auto sales, that's a good indicator that even though the economy might be chugging along, consumers are starting to get a little bit more tight with their money and a little bit more concerned. And we've seen a drop in auto sales over the last 3 or 4 months as well. So all of these things are kind of indicating that the market may be reaching the peak and getting ready to turn down the other side. But again, we don't know if that's a week away, a month away, or a year or two away. That's the hard thing to know. Even if we know we're at the top of the market, knowing when we're going to start to drop is a guess for the most part.
Well, definitely. I think a lot of the things that you're saying are apparent to those of us that are watching the market and also, you know, out there investing as well. We're seeing the downturn in prices and some other factors. And again, with real estate, I think it's very regionalized. There is a national economy, but at the same time, there are markets that may even be growing right now, I would imagine, on the upswing. But when you've got that downturn, the downturn happens, what's an investor to do? It doesn't seem like a really good time to buy. It's not a good time to sell because your property is you're gonna get less for your properties. So what's an investor to do on that, on the part where prices are going down and you know, things are getting tougher?
Yeah, absolutely. So when the recession does hit, first thing I would say is if you're flipping houses, it's probably not the best industry to be in. Unfortunately, while we like to say that it's always a good time to be investing in real estate, it's always a good time to be flipping houses, when prices are trending down, flipping houses can be very, very difficult. So I do recommend that any house flippers that want to stay in real estate during the downturn, they start to get familiar with other strategies. Buy and hold. There's some great opportunities for buy and hold. So as we get deeper into the recession, we're going to see more foreclosures, we're going to see more short sales, and we're going to start to see more sellers who are willing to provide creative financing opportunities. So sellers who are willing to hold a note and do seller financing, or sellers who are willing to do a subject to deal. And a subject to deal is basically where the seller allows the buyer to just take over their loan. They can't pay their loan anymore, but they don't want to go into foreclosure. They're underwater on their property. So they find a buyer who says, I'm just going to take over the payments on your property. So you don't get foreclosed on. It doesn't hurt your credit. And eventually I'll pay off the property and you can walk away without having to worry about your credit getting hit. So that's a subject too. And as we get deeper into the recession and as sellers get more and more desperate, there are a lot of sellers that are willing to do this. And this can be a win-win for both parties. So from a buy and hold perspective, there are going to be a lot of great opportunities during the downturn. Multifamily investors are going to see some opportunities as well. So when we get further into the downturn, lending gets really tight. It's hard to refinance. And there are going to be a lot of people who have bought apartment buildings or apartment complexes during the run-up, and they're now 5 years into their loan, they're hitting a balloon payment, and they need to refinance, and they find they can't refinance, or the value of the property is dropped, and they can't refinance as much as they need to. And so what they have to do is sell that apartment building or that apartment complex at a discount to avoid losing it to foreclosure. So if you're a multifamily investor or a commercial investor, the middle of a downturn is a great time to be picking up properties when the owners are having trouble refinancing or can't refinance out as much as they need to. And then basically, the recession is a great time to be opportunistic. So you're not going to be able to build a business that's doing 30 or 40 or 50 deals a month if you were doing that during the expansion. But there's still going to be some great deals out there. And you need to just be opportunistic, be open to finding those good deals, have cash available. So what you'll find during the downturn is a lot of sellers are going to be very sensitive to having to do quick sales. I know a lot of investors that during a downturn will basically monitor foreclosure sales and will approach sellers just days before a foreclosure and say, hey, instead of going to foreclosure in 2 days. I can purchase your property for cash in the next 24 hours. So if you have the ability to solve a seller's problem by providing cash quickly, that can be a great opportunity. So there are a lot of opportunities during the downturn. You just have to be opportunistic and mostly focus on the buy and hold side of things as opposed to the buying and reselling side of things.
Wow. This has been fantastic. You've given us some, just wonderful information and a whole different outlook. I think that book is going to be a great one to pick up for people. And we're definitely going to have a link to it in the show notes and give people an opportunity to really prepare themselves instead of just, get scared or concerned. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I mean, start planning now while we're at the top of the market, and you can actually do things that can affect getting through it and not just surviving, as you say, but thriving here. Gosh, thank you so much, Jay. This has been a great, great interview. Thank you.
Absolutely. This was a whole bunch of fun, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah. Well, it was another book I didn't even get to touch on about your negotiating. So I'm going to take you up on that because it sounds like a great book. Great book. So, well, we are at the close of our show here, and wanted to give folks at least an opportunity. How can they find out about you and what you do? Maybe even try to contact you.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to connect with anybody that's interested in connecting. I'm pretty active on Facebook, and my username on Facebook is J Scott Investor, letter J Scott Investor on Facebook. My website is 123flip.com. I can be reached on Bigger Pockets, J Scott on Bigger Pockets. And anybody that wants to send me an email, the letter J at 123flip.com.
Awesome. Well, we have a tradition here, and we close every show out with our guest giving us their best old hound dog howl. So, Jay, if you are ready, go ahead and close us out.
How's that? Excellent.
That was so good. That was so good. Oh, man. Awesome. Well, Jay, thank you so much for being on and sharing your time with us. And I'm going to take you up on having you back here. And we're going to talk about negotiating later on. So, and we'll probably have to do a lot of that in the recession, I'm sure, as well.
Absolutely. So. Thanks so much, Bill. This was great.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And I just want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now. But the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note everything we talked about today can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And look for this episode with Jay Scott. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.